thought I'd read something to you that Ram had me up awakened early this morning, so entitled Universal Love and Service. The attitude of universal love and service is not something that is only for a certain time in your life, limited to only when you are either young or old. For instance, you may think of this having this ideal of love and service when you are raising your family or working in the world. Then you think of retiring, being able to relax, living just for yourself. Or you may think that you are busy trying to earn a living now, and when you retire, then you can dedicate your life to service to humanity. However, universal love and service need not be relegated to any particular time or place in your life and excluded from others. Rather, this act of loving service may be part of everything you do, and it becomes the source of great joy and fulfillment that pervades every aspect of your life from cradle to grave. And when leaving this body, you yearn for even more of it. You may find, in the beginning of thinking of this idea, the noble goal of serving this world. You may find in the beginning of thinking about this idea, the noble goal of serving this world is limited or rather constrained. For instance, the image of Mother Teresa of Calcutta may come to mind, that you have to leave everything behind to serve the poor, and only this would count as universal love and service. Living a more ordinary life, in your mind, does not really count in the field of universal love and service. However, as you continue to explore this idea, of loving service, new vistas may come to grow about the meaning of this most beautiful subject. The idea of bringing the attitude of universal love and service into your everyday life makes you keenly aware that every day there are countless opportunities to love and to serve. You now make a determination to find room for this high-minded endeavor in your life, making that a time of service to others. If you are in service industry, you now feel that in serving your customers, you are serving God. Each customer is God in human form and has some need that you can help fulfill. You are attuning yourself inwardly to what God is directing you to do moment to moment. Now you feel the divine life flowing through you in your service. You are a witness to what He thinks, speaks, and acts through you as you go about your service. You are filled with a thrill and a joy that in doing the most simple tasks. When you produce goods that others will use in their lives, you perceive that you are making these products with love and joy. You see in your mind's eye all those who will use this product will have enhanced lives. You feel God flowing through you as you make these products, as love flows and love permeates each product sent out. When you raise children, you come into contact with any children, you feel the love of your Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, coursing through your heart. When your children need instruction or correction, you feel the wisdom of your spiritual nature flowing through your words and actions. Yours is a sacred task in life in helping children to fulfill all of their God-given potential. Universal love and service comes through you in a loving and serving your family. In your spiritual practice of daily meditation and devotion to God, you are also serving humanity. Jesus taught that if a soul is lifted up in God, all humanity is lifted up as well. This is the absolute truth. The illumination you get from your spiritual practice will broadcast itself to this world, even if you were to live in total isolation. And when you go out into the world, that illumination you receive in your spiritual practice will inform your thoughts, words, and actions in all that you do. This is the highest service to humanity. Even if you are very limited in what you can do in the body, your thoughts have power and affects this world, especially when your thoughts are God-tuned. Just thinking about another person with love and light has a transformative power. Prayerfully broadcasting your God-tuned thoughts has an uplifting effect for this world in tremendous ways. Begin to expand your ideas of how universal love and service can be applied in your life. This heartfelt attitude will remove greed, fear, and lust from dominating your life as a greater, more enlightened attitude pervades your thoughts and actions. Your words are now loving and healing, even if you have to correct another's behavior. God experience will saturate your being as you move through this creation in loving service. Whether you are in the marketplace, creating products, raising a family, or deep in your spiritual practice, you will be raising the consciousness of all humanity, of all creation. This is your most sacred task and privilege. In this universal love and service, the greatest reward is built into the action itself. While no business can survive without making a profit, and through your service you may make a good living, even with material rewards as part of your service, the greatest reward you will have is the universal love and service, is the presence and flow of God. Union with God brings its own rewards as divine life flows through you as love, light, and bliss. Imbuing your life with God, every thought, word, and action will be a blessing and a service of love to this world. A family came for the darshan of Swami Satchidananda a week after their father left the body. They reported that their father had been in good health until the morning of his passing. That morning he had dysentery and quickly grew delirious. His rapid decline made the family decide to take him to the hospital. By the time he was checked in, he could no longer recognize his own children. However, even in that state, he continued to chant the name of God. He left the body soon after, continuing his sacred chant. As the family told of this passing to Swamiji, the room in which we sat was surcharged with wonder and divine inspiration. Even in his passing, this family's father was serving by his constant remembrance of God. Though he did not even recognize his own children, he left the body in complete peace and bliss. Just think of saturating your life with universal love and service. Do not limit this idea to just a particular mode or time or life. Rather, broaden your vision so that every moment of your life is filled with wonder and bliss. Then there will be no empty spaces in your life, no dead times, no regrets, and you will have lived your life fully. You are made in the image and likeness of God. Make this truth your reality. Be in bliss of God always, in universal love and service. Wanted to speak to you this morning about this notion of universal love and service, which is a watchword of Swami Ram Dass and something that he himself lived, as well as so many in the ashram there. And it is a tremendous kind of idea when you really begin to think about it. So many of us live in this life and we just think of ourselves as being human beings, trying to get along as best as we can, being a good person. And that's all right as far as it goes. But then some deeper calling comes to you. You feel that you are drawn to toward something higher, something better. You may not have a word for it or even know exactly what that's going to be like. Just simply that you're being drawn up. And as you do so, you enter upon this inner spiritual path. We begin to really focus on what dwells inside of us. You know, the concept that you are made in the image and likeness of God is really something to think about. If that is true, then that means that everything that God is, you are as well. You have the same attributes, you have the same consciousness, you have the same everything. You think about how most people live their lives and they just live it on the surface. They don't go deep into themselves to find out where this might be true, where this potential, this possibility of the universal life is there and is for everyone. When I first started upon this journey, I was just in my mid and late teens, and I'd always had in my early life a spiritual perspective. Sometimes I would sit in my room and I would just hear this tremendous sound, and I had no words for it. I would call it the sound I heard in silence, just because I had never heard of such a thing, and I was too shy to talk to any about it. Not that anybody in my life at that time could have explained it. They wouldn't have known, but it was this tremendous sound of ohm, and sometimes it was so loud it would hurt my head and my ears. But I didn't know what to do with that. I wasn't taught how to meditate. I wasn't taught how to tune in to that divine vibration and make it my very own. And so, as most normal youths, I started getting entranced with this world and trying to make my way in this world. But I never saw anything in this world that truly called to me, something that I could give myself 100% to. And I thought perhaps there is something wrong with me, because everyone else seemed to be talking about, you know, what they were going to do with their lives and proceeding forward in that way. And I just couldn't see it. I didn't see any adult, any individual, anything at all that I really felt that I wanted to be like. And gradually, I became aware that there was something greater than myself. I remember it was one of those pivotal times in my life when I was going through an extreme heartache, and I just felt in such pain and desolation. And so I was around midnight. It was one of those beautiful summer evenings. The stars were all laid out like an enormous blanket above me. And I reached out to God, and I wasn't exactly an agnostic, but I wasn't a believer either. I just left the whole issue alone, but I prayed out to God, and I just said, you know, God, if you exist, if I never needed you before, I need you now. I need some relief. I just don't feel that I can even do this anymore. And suddenly it was as if 1,000 pounds of weight was lifted off of me. And I felt this tremendous release from all this pain that I'd been in. And of course, that tricky monkey mind, it jumps right into gear and it says, oh, well, you were looking for something to happen. And so, of course, something happened and you made it happen. But something inside of me knew that it was far more than that. Something had touched me. Some transformative power had helped me in my time of need. And I didn't know what that was, and I didn't have a word. Even though I called out to God, I still wasn't comfortable with that word. And normally if somebody started using that word when I was around, I'd look for the nearest exit and find a way out of there, because I didn't want to hear about that. But I started reading and I started examining, and the things of the East and the traditions of the East really called to me. And I felt there the first time that I read a book about a reasonable description of reincarnation, and I thought, of course, that's exactly how it has to be. There wasn't any question in my mind. And slowly these truths started to unfold, but I always felt like I was missing something essential. I wasn't getting down to the bottom of things. I read about yogis who could go into this breathless state. So I would actually time myself and see how long I could hold my breath, you know, in order to do this breathless state. And I could get to about 4 minutes, which I was pretty proud of. But of course, I was completely off track in the whole business. And that wasn't it at all, but I wasn't trained in it still. And then I read a book about somebody who met their spiritual teacher. Met a guru is a strange concept to me at the time. And I thought, what in the world was that about? But I felt something powerful in it. I felt this calling inside. And I thought, you know, that's what I need. I need to meet somebody who's actually traveled this path, who's gone up into the higher consciousness, who's been where I want to go. And so that started me onto a new part of my journey. And from that time forward, I would go and I would see different yogis and different people along the way. And they were interesting, but I never found anyone who really connected, who really, I thought, this is it, this is the person. I had a small group of friends in college where I was going at, and we were all searchers in that sense. And so one of the friends said, oh, I know this. I met this woman and you'd like to meet her. She's kind of a mother or a grandmother kind of person. And that's her picture there. And Well, that's not what I was thinking about. I was thinking of maybe somebody from India with long hair, long beard. I had both at the same time. And I said, no, I don't think that I'm interested in that. And they said, no, you have to come, you have to come. And so I went. And we sat, and I listened to Mother, and I felt the truth come from her. And I felt a spiritual power that I had never felt before. And I just thought, this is what I'm looking for. But I wasn't convinced completely. I just had that doubting Thomas inside of me. And I wanted to be convinced. I just didn't want to learn a formula. I just didn't want to learn about what somebody else thought. I wanted to perceive and know the truth myself. And I was still in pain, a kind of deep spiritual pain, this emptiness that I just couldn't get around. So I wanted bliss. So I had those two criteria. I wanted it to be the truth, let the chips fall where they may. I didn't care, whatever the truth was. And I wanted bliss. And if I could have both those things, I was interested. And that's what exactly Mother talked about, what she taught. And it wasn't just simply about learning rituals or formulas and so forth, but it was about really realizing the truth, realizing it to the point where every cell in my body and my being would resonate with that truth. And that's what I yearn for. I yearn for a complete and total transformation. And so as I followed along, the doubting Thomas slowly started to recede into the background as experience after experience began to reveal themselves. And then one beautiful evening, I used to sit up. I lived in Bellingham at the time. I was going to a university, and I had a favorite place. I had explored this remote hill in the sense that nothing had been built up on it. And so Seaholme Hill, and I was up there, and there's a forested area. There's a huge rock that was there. And when I got and I found this rock, I just felt a kind of spiritual power emanating from this place. So I was encouraged. So I would go up every night, and I would sit on that rock, and I would be able to look out and see all the city lights from there. And then I would just close my eyes and go inside. And one night, I had a most tremendous experience, and I had not since a child really related to Jesus, but I felt and had this vision of Jesus come to me. And he said, "You are the bridesmaid, and I am the groom." Now, that can seem kind of strange because I don't look particularly like a bridesmaid. But I knew metaphysically that that's true, that the soul is the feminine, that the spirit is the masculine, and that there's this divine marriage that takes place. And so I was thrilled at this. I was thrilled. But in my heart, I was feeling this just tremendous pain, like something was splitting my heart right down the center. And it was just tremendous. And night after night, as I sat in meditation, I had that kind of pain, and I just felt like I wanted to break it open somehow and make it pour forth whatever it was. I didn't know what was in there. And at the time, I couldn't really say that I loved anything or anybody. I didn't hate. I just didn't have that positive feeling of love. I wasn't sure I knew what the word meant. And so as I sat the next night in meditation, this pain became so intense, I just thought it would just break me in half. And I couldn't stand it. Finally, it did. Something snapped. And it made a sound. I wouldn't say you'd hear it on the outside if you were there, but I heard it plenty on the inside. And there is a sound of snap. And right here in this heart center, which is different than the physical heart, it's right in the center of the chest area, split open. And this tremendous love started pouring out through my heart. And before that, a minute before that, I would say, I don't even know what love is. Not sure that I really ever experienced it. But this love just started pouring out, and it was like an enormous ocean of love. And suddenly, the air all around me was filled with this love, the ground, the trees, everything. And I suppose it was good that it was nighttime and nobody is around, because I started swimming in the dirt. I started hugging the trees. I hadn't been a tree hugger before that. And I can't describe to you how powerful, how beautiful, how profound was this love that was pouring through my heart. And that since that time, has been a constant feature in my life to one degree or another. It hasn't been as overwhelming all the time as that, or I wouldn't be able to function at all in this world. They probably would have locked me up someplace. But it's a tremendous thing when you go into this internal path, the path of the spine and the brain. Now, as human beings, we all have a spine and a brain. And it performs very many important functions on a physical level. But when you go into this interior path, you realize that this spine is much more than what it appears to be, that there are different aspects to it. And from yoga, we know that there is the physical spine, and that the physical spine is actually bifurcated as it goes up, but that there's this interior spine. And this interior spine, astral spine, the energetic spine, is continuous from the very tailbone area all the way up to the back of the head, across to this point here, this ajna, which is sometimes called the third eye point, and then up to the top of the head to the crown area, what in yoga is called sahasrara. And that this pathway is then filled with what is called kundalini. Now, we know about the serpents from Christian teachings. In the Old Testament, we know that the serpent is blamed for the fall of mankind in the story of Adam and Eve. And this is a symbolic story of what happens within each and every individual. That we are born in this paradise, so to speak. We commune with God easily. It's the most natural thing in the world. Sometimes we think of living a spiritual life as an unnatural thing, but that's not it at all. It's the most natural thing you can imagine. But that this serpent force becomes downward facing, and it takes consciousness down into the lower centers. Now, these lower centers are all focused on body consciousness, survival, sex consciousness, willpower. And as it gets downwardly focused in that nature only, we forget our divine nature, which goes from the heart center and the throat center, this center at the ajna, and the top of the head. And these all represent the higher nature. So we get very focused upon this thing of the world, the thing of the body. And that begins to consume us. It's everything that we think of as life many times. You meet somebody who's very salt of the earth kind of person. It's what's in their senses. It's what they see in this world. There's nothing that it goes beyond that. And they may go to church. They may have a spiritual life of sorts. But they basically see themselves when they leave this body. In fact, there's many teachings that this body is resurrected in the last days. So them bones will rise again. Huh? They'll come again and they'll form a body again. And then that'll be your new body. And it's just simply an extension of this material body and this material consciousness. Only perhaps maybe you'll be good then instead of being part good and part bad. I don't know what happens to the other people. Well, we know what happens to the other people. They all go to the hot spot down there and they get punished forever and ever. It just doesn't make any sense, does it? Not at all. And that's when I was 12 years old when I rejected the kind of standard version around things, as I just thought, well, how is that fair that people who had never even heard of Jesus are somehow condemned for the rest of eternity? And it didn't make any sense at all. It didn't seem like a very good plan, much less a perfect plan. So that's when I divided ways with that kind of thinking. It just didn't make any sense to me. What it says in the scriptures, which is a description of what every individual goes through from the human to the divine, is that it becomes an unquenchable fire. Unquenchable fire. And what does that mean? This is a purifying flame that when this serpent force begins to turn itself upward instead of downward, it rises up through the spine, but it has to work through everything that we've created in our human expression. And one of the ways it does that is through this fire force. It's a purifying force, and it can actually create heat in you. Now, it may be a heat of the body that somebody else can feel, but it can also be an internal heat that wouldn't register if you had a thermometer in your mouth. But it's a very intense heat, nevertheless. And it will continue to burn until you have complete purification. And this is something that every soul must go through if they have divorced themselves along the way from the divine consciousness. Now, not every soul does. It just so happens that most souls who live on this material plane have done so. And so we have to, if you think about taking a journey, you live in a village someplace and you decide to go for a long walk, and you go out and you go up some hills and down some hills, but perhaps it's mostly downhill and it's pretty easy going. And you think, well, this is fun. But one day you just think, well, it's time to go back to my village, and I have to turn around and I have to reverse my steps of everything that I've taken in my outward journey. Only this time it seems like it's all uphill. And this is the way it is for the soul that gets entranced with the thing of the senses. It seems like it's fun, it seems like it's pleasurable, but there's pain that gets involved with that. And finally we tire of the journey and we want to return to our spiritual home. And in doing so, we have to reverse our course, begin to traverse back up through the spine, and as we do so, we meet everything that we've done in our outward course, and we are not left to just our own devices. There's this tremendous serpent force inside of us, what in yoga is called kundalini. And it begins to purify, it purges. We have to face all those things that we've done. And that's why it's a difficult path, because we have to face those things that we've done, and not just in this lifetime, but perhaps in many times. And so we can get where we don't even want to sit for meditation, because these things are starting, we're having to look at them, we're having to face them. And some of them are not pleasant, not at all. I remember a time when I had terrific trouble with my back, right down at my fifth lumbar, and I had some damage done to there, and just the idea was there, well, what is this all about? Why am I having such difficulty here, and injury, and pain here? And one day when I was sitting meditating, this whole lifetime unfolded in my own consciousness, and I saw myself at a time when I had been a warrior, a knight. And I had been involved in trying to usurp some powers and get power of my own and so on. I wasn't necessarily a good knight. I wasn't necessarily a bad one by the standards. But I was very much invested in gaining something for myself. And in the course of this, I was in a battle and I was struck down and I was hit with the sword right at that place in my back in the fifth lumbar. And it had paralyzed me from the waist down. And I had spent the rest of my life not only not getting into a more powerful position myself, but I was in a completely powerless position, and very humiliating and very dangerous for me at the time. And so I carried that psychological, emotional time with me in my body. And as I was making progress on the spiritual path, I had to face that part of me. I had to allow it to resolve itself in my consciousness to where I could go beyond it, and I wasn't defined by the need for power or for the fear or the anger that was still lodged right inside my body. So you can begin to understand when we sit to quiet the mind and all these things start bubbling up and we just think, my goodness, I don't want to have to deal with this. I don't want to have to face this. And sometimes you want to be anywhere other than quieting the mind and being quiet and realizing God. You just think there's no God here. There's just travesty. There's just difficulty. There's just pain. There's just whatever it is that's coming up in your own system that you don't like. So it takes great courage. Sometimes people say, oh, a religious life or a spiritual life, that's retreating from life. Nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. You face life squarely. And it brings up every God-blessed thing that you've ever done. But there's this tremendous grace that's operating you in you as well. And when you open yourself up to this divine consciousness, by whatever name you want to call it, it's just the same. You know, as Shakespeare said, a rose is a rose. By any other name, it's still a rose. And you could say of God, too, that God is just a name, whether it's God or Allah or Brahman. Well, it doesn't make any difference. It's that divine consciousness. It's that creative force and intelligence that's brought everything into being. And you don't have to absolutely believe in that if you've not had the experience within your own self of knowing that that's true. But you can accept the proposition, at least, of the possibility. And the possibility that you could realize that, that you could know that. Would that not be something worth pursuing? Would that not be something setting aside some time for every single day? And pursuing a spiritual practice to see whether it's true or not. That's one of the things that attracted me to this path. Is that it's a provable proposition. It's just not a faith or something that you have to accept because somebody else said it so. And what is also part is that every great spiritual tradition and every great spiritual master who's ever walked this earth has essentially said the same within their own language, their own social context, using their own imagery. But when you get down to it, it's that there is a divine nature within you, and that divine nature is knowable. Knowable. You can experience that. You can know it. You can come into that state where it just resonates through so completely throughout your whole being that there's nothing left of a doubter. There's nothing left outside of it. For most of us, it comes as a gradual thing. There are a few rare souls. The great Anandi Moyima, when she was born into this world, she said, "When I was born, I was the same. When I lived through this life, I was the same. I've been the same all the way through." Now, many of us can point to some part of ourselves that would say, "This is me." If I was 6 years old, I would have said, "This is me." We might point right here to the heart center. "This is me. This is, there's something the same about me." But she meant it in a much more profound way than that. She realized she came into this world with complete knowledge of who she was. Now, most of us don't start out there. We start out in a dazed and confused situation. We start out in darkness. Now, we may have some intuitive understanding of it, but we're not rock solid in it. And so through this spiritual practice, through our journey, that is where the place that we aim for. That's what we want for ourselves, is to come to that place where we are absolutely anchored in that truth. In the symbolic story of when Jesus is asking the disciples, "Who am I? Who do you say I am?" And now each one of these disciples represent another point of consciousness along this spine in this upward ascension. And Peter talks about his realization, "You are the living Christ. You are the Messiah. You are that pure expression of divine consciousness that has been manifest in through the human being." And each one of us has that Christ consciousness within us. And when Jesus hears that, he knows the truth of it. And he says, "You will be my rock." Peter means rock, means solid. "You will be the rock upon which I will build my church." This is the internal church of consciousness. This is the internal sense of knowledge of truth. A truth that's transcendent to just the mind thinking, "Well, maybe this is true and maybe that's true and I change my mind later on." There is a rock solid truth that is unchangeable and is knowable. And so Peter represents that truth. And it's that foundation of truth. It's when you also have Peter awaken in you and you recognize that divine consciousness right within your own self. and you can name it. And you know it. Without a doubt, you know it. And when you have that experience, you have that Peter consciousness. And that is part of the divine consciousness that's lifted up. That's lifted up and transcends. But for most of us, it's a longer journey, and we go between these opposites. The part of us believes, a part of us doubts. A part of us is filled with light, a part of us is filled with darkness. And so on. And we have to work through all of that with a great determination, with great strength, with great courage. And if you are willing to take that challenge, then you can go through this complete and total transformation. Now, you will still walk the world as any other person. If somebody saw you from the outside, they wouldn't necessarily see anything particularly different about you. People would come to Swami Ramdas, and maybe they made some comments about him because he would laugh and he would joke, and they would see him as perhaps just an ordinary fellow in some ways. And he said, what? Do they expect to see somebody with horns coming out of their head? You know, just when Jesus was walking the earth, they had to have somebody point him out in order to know who to arrest. What does that tell you? He looks just the same as all the other people standing around him. And so you appear on the outside to look as anybody else does. And yet there is this total transformation that has gone on inside of you, and you know it, you feel it, you experience it. And when that happens, and gradually you go through all these experiences that finally take you into your full and complete realization, now it is absolutely established. There is no more going in or coming out. There is only union, and that is what yoga means, is union. Union with the divine, union with God. And we enter into that highest consciousness, and now we're established in it. And whether you remain in a body or leave the body, it makes no difference. There is a wonderful saint in India, Totapuri, and he came to Ramakrishna, who is another great master, but they were both not yet complete. They did not have purna, they were not full. And Totapuri came, and he came to teach Ramakrishna, because Ramakrishna is a great disciple of Divine Mother. And every time that he would concentrate here at the ajna, he'd see the Divine Mother. Well, he had this absolutely incredible vision of the Divine Mother, and she was so beautiful and so filled with light. And he would just get so focused on her that he didn't go beyond the image. And so Totapuri said, no, that will not do. You have to go beyond the image to go into the absolute. So he said, concentrate here. So Ramakrishna would sit down. He'd dutifully, okay, really going to meditate. And he'd think about that. Oh, the Divine Mother. And he'd just get entranced with her. And Totapuri was fierce yogi. He says, no. Not like that. And he goes through that several times, and he keeps on, Ramakrishna repeats the same thing. So Totapuri looks around in the hut where he's at. He sees a little sharp piece of glass. And he says, concentrate here. And he takes that glass, and it sounds cruel, doesn't it? But he pushed it right into there. Ramakrishna went beyond the image and went into the absolute. For 7 days, he was in an absolute state of absorption. In that state of consciousness that takes you beyond all name, all form, all limitation, in which he merged completely and totally with the infinite divine. Now, what that state is cannot really be said in words. I just named off a lot of words around it. And they all indicate, they all point the way. But they're not the way themselves. It's not that experience. You can't know it. Not really, until you experience it yourself. But he entered into that absolute state of consciousness. And he said, my God, he did what in a few hours it took me 20 years to do. Of course, Ramakrishna had been at it for a little while in addition to that. And he came as a high, high developed soul. But Totapuri also had a lesson to learn. Because he could go into the absolute, But he was completely impersonal. He didn't see the universal vision. He didn't see that this world was an expression of divine consciousness. He saw it merely as an illusion, which is a step up on the path, but it's not the absolute path. And so he was wrestling with this, and while he was wrestling with this, he got a terrible case of dysentery, and he was having a difficult time of it, and he was in a lot of pain. He said, "What am I doing here? I've used this body. I've realized God. I don't need this body anymore. I'm just going to drop it now. It's just nothing but trouble anyway." So he decided he was going to drown himself one night, and it was this beautiful moon-filled night, and he goes out onto the Ganges, and he starts walking out into the river. And as he walks out, he just keeps going, and he keeps going, and he's waiting to drown himself, but he's not sinking. And he gets out halfway into the Ganges, and he realizes he's walking on water, and he can't drown himself. Divine Mother won't let him. And he looks around, and he sees this beautiful temple complex area in this moonlight, and suddenly it hits him. This entire creation is filled with divine consciousness. In the Gospel of St. Thomas, one of the ones that wasn't utilized in the New Testament, but it says, Jesus says, "The kingdom of heaven is spread all over this earth, but who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it?" You see, it's one thing to believe it, to think it. It's something else to actually perceive it. In that moment, Todapuri, he knew it. He saw it. He experienced it. And it's not just a vision like you would see something. When something like that happens, it affects your entire being. Every cell of your being resonates with the truth of it. And as Mother would say, she says, "I know it, and I know that I know it." It comes like that. And there's just nothing left in you that doubts or doesn't know it any longer. Now, if that seems an impossibility, it's not. If it's rare, that may be true, but that doesn't make it impossible. And so when you come into that state of conscious realization, it releases you, it frees you. And Todapuri, who was one of these wandering sadhus who would never stay any place for more than 3 days, he'd been for months with Ramakrishna. And the next morning he came, he pranamed to Ramakrishna. He says, "Now I know what you're talking about." And he left, and he continued on his wandering journey. So if these states seem too far away, too exotic, they're not at all. There's some part of you who is already realized and has never left you. It may be residing deep in the unconscious mind, but it's there nevertheless. And when you come into these states of realization, they don't come as strangers. But they come as deeply familiar states, and when they blossom and bloom inside of you, they feel, you just think to yourself, well, of course, that's how it is. That's how it's always been. And it comes as a complete and total affirmation of yourself. In one sense, we have to give everything up. We have to renounce this world. We have to renounce, and that's true, because those are the things that preoccupy this mind. But when you come through this experience, you see everything is God. When Mother went to Papa Ram Dass and she went through this mystical crucifixion in which she was shown in detail how this story of Jesus is actually the story of every individual going from human consciousness to divine consciousness. It's like a blueprint that's been laid out. You know, where do you get that from? Mother got it directly from God. She would be taken through an experience. And then God would take her to the Bible and open it up and say, "Here, this is what this is describing exactly." And so she got it direct in that sense. And so many people are just thinking of the historical aspect and the imagery and so forth, when in reality there is this truth underneath it, all ready to be discovered. And it's time for the world to wake up to this. But she was with Papa Ram Dass, and she went through all of these experiences. But before that happened, Prabhupada said, you have to put everything into the ocean of God, all the attachments, everything that you are. And she had great attachment to her children. She was in her mid-50s. Her children were grown by that time. She was having grandchildren. She felt a great attachment to her husband and her children. And she, with all everything inside of her, she put them all into the ocean. God, they're yours. I give them to you. Then she went through these experiences. And after going through many of these experiences, she had more to go through, but she went through a lot. When she was coming out of them, she felt even more love for her children, for her grandchildren, for her husband. And so she thought, maybe I've done something wrong here. So she went to Papa, who was the master, and she said, Papa, she said, this is my experience before, and now I have this even greater love. And he said, can you see God in them? And she said, well, yes, of course. He said, then love God. You see? Because then love is real love. It's true love. It's not the kind of love that binds you to others through attachment. It's the pure, fresh expression of love that comes through your heart. And you can love this universe with everything you have, even as God does. Because you are made in that likeness and in that image. The very same as God. You have all the qualities inside of you. So let us think deeply on these things. Let us, from this day forward, dedicate ourselves to the proposition. Whether you have a name for it or not, you'll have an intuitive sense of there's something greater inside of you. Something larger. And you know, it doesn't stop. As long as we have an individual consciousness, we say that God is infinite, but we don't really know what that means. But we continue to explore, even after you have your oneness with God, you continue to explore the great beingness of God, the great body of God. New truths, new things continue to unfold themselves before you. And they're a delight. And you have work to do. And so in many ways, life continues, but with one great difference. Now, instead of living in a state of isolation and separation, you feel yourself always in communion and in union with that highest divine consciousness. And that frees you from all other things that have in the past bound you. And now you experience bliss. You experience wisdom that just comes to you. You just know it because your channels of intuition with God are wide open. This love flows through you. Pure joy bubbles up inside of you. All of these things are our natural attributes. They really are. All of this sense of separation and the pain and sorrow that we go through with it is all an aberration. It's just a small parenthesis in time. But in truth, even when you're in that state of separation, there's some deeper part of you that is in union with God. It's just how do we make it conscious? So we learn to still the mind. We learn to love God. We learn to put ourselves into the stream of consciousness that all the great masters have as they've made this upward ascension up the spine and into the higher centers. And when we do that, we'll know the same truth, have the same experience that they've had. That's what they want for us. They don't want us to fall down and worship them as individuals. They want us to emulate them. They want us to follow them. They are the way, the truth, and the life. That means we follow. That means they are the leaders. And if we follow, we'll go to exactly the same place they do. They're not looking for any kind of individual worship. They want you to love the divine spirit as much as they do. Because they know when you do, you'll experience what they experience. The love, the truth, the freedom, the bliss will all be yours then. So let us step forward boldly, courageously, and go forward into that infinite consciousness and really discover that living truth that resides within each and every one of us. Now, if you'll pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. Close with one final writing by Paramahansa Yogananda entitled Service. Life should be chiefly service. Without that ideal, the intelligence that God has given you is not reaching out toward its goal. When in service you forget the little self, you will feel the big self of spirit. As the vital rays of the sun nurture all, so should you spread rays of hope in the hearts of the poor, the forsaken, kindle courage in the hearts of the despondent, and light a new strength in the hearts of those who think that they are failures. When you realize that life is a joyous battle of duty and at the same time a passing dream, when you become filled with the joy of making others happy by giving them kindness and peace, in God's eyes, your life is a success. Isn't that beautiful? So let us sit for a moment. And just think for this time that this great self of God, resides within you. And that in the first of John, Jesus said that to all them who received him, gave he power to become sons of God. That to receive, to open yourself, simply to open and allow, you don't have to make it happen. That's God's job, if you want to say it that way. Your part is simply open yourself. Become receptive. Soften those places that you've learned to guard yourself in this life. This life can be a really tough proving ground. It really can be. But we can learn the wrong lessons from it. True, we need to defend ourselves at times. But we don't need to be defensive always. And so to find that safe place, that safe haven within yourself, where you can let down your guard, where you can soften your heart, where you can become receptive to the spiritual rays, just like an opening flower opens itself to the rays of sunlight. Let go of fear, anger, bitterness, greed. Let go of those things. And just simply receive. And in that receptivity, just see yourself as a blossoming. Opening and blossoming. And as you unfold those soul petals, one petal at a time,
you begin to feel that sense of peace, sense of joy, sense of love, the light of wisdom and intelligence. You breathe that in and breathe it through. You breathe it in and breathe it through. And each day practice that. When you wake up in the morning, you can say, if you like, "Good morning, God. How are you?" And then you just feel yourself in your heart, your soul, just softening and opening and receiving. Through the day, all your busy activities, just take a moment out here and there. Put a smile in your heart. Soften and open and receive. Teach yourself to really value that inner soul joy and bliss. Might see yourself as a spiritual connoisseur, like a connoisseur of wine learns to really know about the wines. You really learn to know about God's bliss and all the varieties that it comes in. And you attune your mind to it. And you allow it to transform you. And my love and my blessings go out to you, that you may realize that highest and greatest truth within yourself and become truly freed, even while living.